The Buddha lists the factors for awakening. Equanimity comes at the end of the list. Which gives the impression that it's the highest of the list. And in one way it is, but in many ways it's not. It's also listed as one of the factors that's useful at some times. In other words, when the mind is overly excited, overly energetic, overly worked up about things, equanimity is one of the calming factors. It goes together with serenity and concentration. When your energy is too low, that's not the time to be developing equanimity. You have to work on the factors that are more energizing. Analysis of qualities, rapture, persistence. So you have to use your equanimity together with your discernment to figure out what's just right. There's a story that John Cha told about one time he was invited to the palace in Bangkok with a couple of other Chans. And the king at the time was worried about some political problems, the demonstrations in the streets. And after the meal, he asked the Chans what to do. And the other two Chans were more senior to a John Cha, so they spoke first. And they both recommended that the king develop equanimity. When it came to John Cha's turn, he said, well, yes, you need to develop equanimity, but you have to develop it together with discernment, knowing what to accept and what not to accept, or what not to be equanimous about. This connects with two principles. One is that there are some things where you can make a difference, and those things you don't want to just leave alone. If you can make a difference for the better, that's what you focus on. Leave equanimity for the things where you really can't make a difference. The other principle is that there are some things in the mind that respond just to your watching them. In other words, certain kinds of greed or aversion or delusion come up, and when you recognize them for what they are, it's as if they get embarrassed. They just go away. There are other instances, though, that are not embarrassed at all. They're firmly entrenched. They've got lots of arguments, lots of justifications. And you can sit there and watch and watch and watch, and they're not going to go away. They may go away after a while, but they're going to come back and keep coming back until you dig down and do something about them. That's where the Buddha says you have to use the fabrications of exertion. In other words, you use the way you breathe, you use the way you think about things, evaluate things, you use your perceptions and feelings to deal with those problems, to figure out where they're coming from and what you can do to undercut them so that eventually they don't come back. So you need to use your discernment together with your equanimity to know when you let things be and when you don't. And it's important that you recognize there are basically three levels to equanimity. The first one is the one the Buddha taught his son when he was first teaching him meditation. First instruction, make your mind like earth. People spit on the earth, people throw dirty things on the earth, but the earth doesn't recoil. I mean, your mind like water. People use water to wash dirty things away, but the water isn't upset. Make it like fire, wind. Fire burns dirty things, wind blows dirty things away, blows them around. But the fire and the wind aren't affected by them. So it's a very beginning instruction in meditation is you have to learn how to make your mind really solid. Not run away from unpleasant things. This is where equanimity is combined with your powers of endurance. Now, the Buddha is not saying that you just make the mind like a lump of earth, totally unresponsive. The purpose here is so you can watch things carefully and watch them in a reliable way. If you're the sort of person that runs away from negative things, you're never going to know them. You're never going to understand them. So we're not here just to put up with things or be equanimous. We're here to endure them so we can understand them, how they come, how they go, learn how to observe them. This is shown in how the Buddha followed up those instructions. After telling Rahula to make his mind like earth, he then taught him the steps for breath meditation, which involve a lot of proactive involvement with the breath. You're not just sitting there letting it come in and go out any old way, any old which way. In fact, the Buddha criticized those who practice breath meditation just letting it come in, go out, and trying to be equanimous all the time. You try to train yourself to breathe, aware of the whole body. You try to calm down the effect that the breath has on the body. Breathe in a way that gives rise to rapture, that gives rise to a sense of pleasure and ease. Learn to breathe in a way that calms down the effect of your feelings and perceptions on the body and on the mind. And while you're breathing in and out, if you see that the mind needs to be gladdened, you gladden it. If it needs to be steadied, you steady it. If it needs to be released, you release it. In other words, in this case, equanimity is the foundation for acting skillfully, making a difference where you can. So that's the first level of equanimity. The second level is the level that comes when you really can get the mind to settle down and be still. So there's a sense of ease and rapture, and then the ease and rapture fade away and you're left with equanimity. This is where the mind is really solid and even more observant, aware all around. This is the kind of equanimity you can use to watch things in the mind. And as we said earlier, you begin to notice that with some of the defilements in the mind, and they are defilements, we don't usually like to use the word defilement, but that's what they are. They cloud the mind, they darken the mind. Just watch them with equanimity and they fade away. Those are the ones that aren't really deeply rooted. So this is the equanimity that comes from concentration. That's useful in some cases in dealing with the problems of the mind. Because you begin to see the mind has all kinds of ways of creating problems for itself. And when you see that it's superfluous, it's very easy to let go. That leaves the deeper problems. And these are the ones where you really do have to figure them out. Understand, where is this coming from? Exactly why does the mind go for greed, aversion, and delusion? Why does it like these things? As the Buddha said, if you're going to go beyond these defilements, you have to figure out, one, how they come about, how they disappear, and how they're going to come back again after they've disappeared. And figure out what's their allure. Why do you like them? What is there about greed that you really like? And usually it's something you don't want to admit to yourself, so it's hard to see. This is why equanimity is, again, a useful foundation for seeing these things. So you can finally admit to yourself, well, yes, there is that element in the mind. There's that desire. There's that taste in the mind that really likes these things. And then you compare that with the drawbacks. Is the taste worth the price you pay? And it's amazing how the mind can very easily magnify the taste and try to minimize the drawbacks. And again, the equanimity of concentration is a good foundation for seeing this. Because as you get a greater sense of well-being and stability in the mind, there's less hunger. When there's less hunger, you don't fall for the things that look like food and make you pay a heavy price in the end, because you've got better food already. So as you use this foundation of equanimity for analyzing things, understanding things, you finally get to the point where you can let them go. This gives rise to an even greater level of equanimity. It's the equanimity that comes when you found true happiness. There's nothing else you have to struggle for. And you look at all the different things in the area of sight, sound, smells, taste, tactile sensations, and ideas where you used to go foraging for food and you don't feel any desire to go looking there anymore. You've got something better. So equanimity is one of the byproducts of reaching the goal. It's not the essence of the goal. Sometimes you hear the factors of awakening being described as descriptions of awakening itself, but that's not the case. They're part of the path. The goal is something even beyond. And as the Buddha said, it is the highest happiness. From the outside, it may look like equanimity, but inside it's a totally satisfied happiness. So there's the equanimity that's a product of the practice, and there's the equanimity that functions as a factor in the practice. And it's the levels that factor into the practice. Those are the ones we have to pay attention to. The one that's a byproduct, it's going to happen on its own. But the ones we work with, developing the equanimity that allows us to endure things, so we can develop an even deeper equanimity that allows us to see things really clearly, very deeply in the mind. Those are the ones you want to focus on, because those are the ones you can do. Those are the ones you can be responsible for. And as for the results, they'll take care of themselves. But it's always essential that you understand that equanimity is one of the factors. It's not the whole path. And you need to use your discernment to figure out when it's appropriate and when the more proactive side has to come in. It's the discernment that does the real work. So make sure that it's as sharp as possible. This is one of the reasons why analysis of quality comes so early in the list of the factors for awakening, because it has to inform all the other ones. And make sure they stay pointed in the right direction.